KALW.
Before we came down here, though, this lot was just empty and filled with like old needles and dirt, and trash and clutter. It was kind of like that story of like taking trash and turning it into gold, you know?
In Oakland, DIY spaces make treasure out of trash.
Yeah, it was concrete. There's a lot of dirt and then and rocks and love and sweat and blood, maybe a couple cigarettes. And then concrete on top of that.
Today, we learn what it takes to build your own skate park. Then we hear why it's important for sex education to be inclusive.
It's not about STIs. It's about comprehensive sex education is about all things that make us human.
It's an award-winning story from our podcast, TBH. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Oakland has a long legacy of DIY spaces, spaces that are made by and for the communities, many of them underground, not officially sanctioned by the city. But as the Bay Area continues to change, many of these spaces are disappearing. Today, we visit one of these communities in our series, Culture Keepers, profiling people who uplift traditions in their Bay Area communities.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking fucking golden.
Lower Bob's is a skate park on the corner of 9th and Pine Streets in West Oakland. It was built by skaters in 2013. KLW's Alistair Boone caught up with Justin Robinson, better known as Big Hongry, to talk about the past and the present of the skate park.
Bob's is an unlikely oasis at the bottom of 9th Street. It's pressed up against the retaining wall between the Lower Bottoms neighborhood and Highway 880. It's over 7,000 square feet of concrete anarchy, smooth, steep walls and big ramps, covered in colorful graffiti that shines in the sun. I never thought concrete was beautiful until I saw Bob's. Skating, it turns out, changes the way you see things.
You look at stuff differently when you start skating. Like, this is just a park, this is just a curb to someone who doesn't skate. But if you skate and you see a nice curb, you're like, I can have so much fun on just this curb.
That's Big Hongry. He helped build Bob's back in 2013, when it was just a vacant patch of concrete.
Before we came down here, though, this lot was just empty and filled with, like, old needles and dirt, and trash and clutter. I mean, it was like, treacherous. Like, this place wasn't nothing down here at all, you know? It was kind of like that story of, like, taking trash and turning it into gold, you know?
That shift in perspective he got from skateboarding, it's not just about the way he looks at concrete. It's part of his value system.
Skateboarding is hella cool for the aspect of, like, humanizing people, you know? Like, you'll be skating some cutty-ass spot under a bridge or something, and there's someone who lives there, you know? And now you're here, and, like, this person, like, is here every day, every night. And then you get to meet them, and, like, they become a part of the family. Because they're like, oh, the homies are going to be at my crib when I get back, like, building some shit. Now you're, like, chopping up with this homie that you would have never talked to, you know?
Hongry is a co-owner of Break Free Skate Shop in downtown Oakland. For him and the folks who skate Bob's, skating is a conduit for community. In the early days of the park, it was just a bunch of guys with bags and bags of concrete.
A couple cats who knew exactly what to do, and a couple cats still trying to figure out what to do, aka me.
Some didn't know how to use a shovel.
And you're learning. You're learning techniques. You're learning, like, patience, because you got to put the concrete down and you got to step back. You got to let it dry, because if you keep pecking at it, it's going to, like, lump up. That was, like, the crux of it all. It was just like, we're starting something new. If we're down, come through.
They never exactly pulled the permits to build the skate park. There were a few meetings with city officials early on, but those never came to much. Hongry figures after 10 years, the park's credibility speaks for itself.
Bob's has a common law marriage with the streets of Oakland. Let me tap you in.
Bob's isn't the East Bay's only DIY skate park, but it quickly became a mecca for a certain kind of skating. It's fast and dirty, with big scary ramps that make even seasoned skaters' palms sweat. Much of the park is built from scavenged material. A telephone pole becomes a spine, debris from the area becomes fill for the ramps. And they're always adding to it and changing things.
Yeah, it's concrete. It's a lot of dirt and rocks and love and sweat and blood, maybe a couple of cigarettes. And then concrete on top of that.
Julio Pineda skates at Bob's for the excitement and release.
Just getting loose, you know, blowing some steam, getting close to like...
blowing some weed.
Yeah, blowing some weed, you know, getting close to the edge of these obstacles and, yeah, seeing how far you could take it, trying not to get too hurt or keep going if you do get hurt, yeah, or know when to go home and get too hurt.
That's life. You know what I'm saying? Try not to get too hurt, but you keep going if you do get hurt.
It's allegory, but it's also simple.
Just going fast and... that beautiful noise.
For some people, Bob's is more than a skate park.
Right now, it's home, unfortunately, but, you know, it's a place I always have to go.
That's Russ. He lives at Bob's these days. He sleeps under an overhang beneath one of the skate ramps.
It is what it is. You know, I definitely choose this, you know, because they have a bed for me in the city, but, you know, I'm choosing to stay here instead.
So, why is that?
For the home feeling. You know.
He unfolds a letter with an offer for a shelter bed circled in black pen.
And like, this is, I don't know what, I mean, yeah. Maybe tomorrow I'll try it out. Who knows?
What's that say?
I have, bed number 154. Fifth Street.
Russ sets up next to a fire pit, covered in cigarette butts and mosaic tiles. The tiles sparkle in the cool pit, spelling out the names of people who have passed on, who died too young and left their mark on the scene. It's spiritual, like a reliquary, or a hot fire on a cold night.
The reality of it is, stuff's hard in the city, stuff's hard in the country, stuff's hard everywhere. People just wanna get away and do something different than have pain, you know? And like, some of the stuff that makes you feel the best is the stuff that can make you die the fastest, so.
That's right.
Whether it be like alcohol, drugs, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think people are just looking to escape, really, you know? Especially during now, during these times.
And Hungry says Bob's is a welcome reprieve.
That's why skating is cool, though, because you get to tune out of all of that, and you get to just roll around. And you know for sure, if you're not a kook, even if you are a kook, you're still gonna have some homies that are gonna keep repping for you when you go, you know? But if you hold it down for your homies, if you go early, if you go late, the homies are gonna hold it down for you no matter what. They're gonna say your name, they're gonna put it on t-shirts, they're gonna spray paint it. There is like justice in your death, you know? It's not just like a lost cause, you know? We understand.
But change is coming. A new housing development called The Phoenix will soon butt right up to the skate park. A representative from the development company told me the new housing won't displace Bob's. But even if it does impact the culture of the park, Hungry isn't worried.
We just go somewhere else, you know? Nothing, it's whatever, you know? Like, there's no way to get around certain in life. But, I mean, I don't think that it'll happen, you know what I mean? Honestly, I think that if they're smart, they'll leave it there.
A phoenix is a symbol of resurrection. The bird rises from the ashes of what came before. That might be what the housing development is called, but there's already a phoenix here. The spirit of Bob's lives in the people who use it. It can't be contained to a single place. In Oakland, I'm Alistair Boone for Cross Currents.
Al- Alistair is a current Audio Academy Fellow. You can find more stories like this one at kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Well, recently we got some great news. The Northern California chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists awarded the KALW podcast TBH for Best Student Project. It's our podcast by, about, and for teenagers, and three stories from the series won. Here's the host of that award-winning season, Cassidy Canner-Gomes, introducing one of the winning stories.
Today's episode is all about inclusion and health education. As many great minds agree, gender and sexuality are not confined to a binary. But the health curriculum doesn't always reflect diverse experiences. Anti-gay laws are sweeping across the country. Many of them, such as Florida's Don't Say Gay bill, are targeted at public school education. This is a law that prevents teachers from talking about gender and sexuality with younger grades. We talked with our fellow TBH teens who worked on this podcast about what they'd like to change about how teachers talk about gender and sexuality at their schools.
To me, I think that just sex education, from my experience, has just been so focused on don't get pregnant, don't get an STD, that they completely forget that sex is not the same thing for people on different sexuality spectrums. I'm not in the place where I need to be worrying about that I'm going to get pregnant if I'm in a lesbian relationship, but I still need to know about other things, like it's not always just this genital and this genital. And I feel like, sure, they talk about, yes, homosexual sex is okay, but I'm sure no straight guys at my school think that, like, gay sex is normal, because they haven't been taught about that. And I think that if they were taught about that, it wouldn't be so alien or weird to them.
I mean, the health class that I was in, it was basically the very black and white type of thing, where it's like, oh, here's the male stuff and here's the female stuff. And it's more of talking about your birth sex rather than what gender you might identify as.
And I think also, like, different sexualities. Like, we don't really talk about, you know, the spectrum of sexualities. I feel like we talk about, you know, gay or straight, but that's kind of it.
I think a lot of these things are kind of supposed to be, like, almost like apolitical. It's like, oh, talk about sex, but, like, we're not gonna talk about how this, like, affects your everyday life. And I think in some ways that would be really useful.
Those were the voices of me, Carolina Quadros, Elizabeth Trong, and Aria Baldinger-Williams. Our next story comes from George Reitan, a sophomore in San Francisco.
I was homeschooled from fifth grade until high school, and I got most of my sex ed from books my mom gave me out from the library. None of them cover the topic of asexuality. Then, out from the wild, I found what I was looking for. A friend and I went to Pegasus Books in Oakland in 2021. We saw a massive pile of the same book, ACE, What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and the Meaning of Sex. I hunched over a table, and I started reading.
An asexual person is a person who does not experience sexual attraction.
The book had real asexual people talking about the asexual experience. This was the case for me. Sex is so ingrained into the American culture that I had never questioned whether or not I actually wanted it. By that night, I knew for sure I was ace. Ace is short for asexual. In my experience, a lot of people think that asexuality is a choice. They know about abstinence, about chastity, about waiting for marriage, and assume that asexuality is the same. People talk about me or others becoming asexual, as if it wasn't always true. But asexuality is not based on whim. It's a sexuality, if that wasn't clear based on the name. If people talked about asexuality and other overlooked sexualities more, there wouldn't be so many misconceptions. I always wanted a mentor or role model who could talk with me and help me discover things, not only about the world, but about my identity. For freshman year, I went to a public school called Raoul Wallenberg Traditional High School. A few days in, I came to school wearing a petticoat, a wool overcoat, and a blazer. I looked like a Victorian nanny. I probably pinged the gaydar from a mile away. A senior complimented my outfit, and they introduced me to the queer community at Wallenberg. Through them, I met other asexuals. In the Gender Sexuality Alliance, I met my friend Emily Museo. She identifies generally as asexual. Unlike me, she also identifies as
aromantic. I just kind of have a like to think I have a like a platonic relationship with everybody, all friends. Anything else is not as considered for me.
For the most part, my high school teachers talked about sex as if it was an intrinsic part of human nature. Whenever I brought up asexuality during a discussion of romance in English class or in sex ed, it always felt like I was mentioning something taboo. I was disappointed. Emily felt the same way. She had a few classes that brought up the LGBTQIA+ community, but it wasn't what she would have hoped for.
And it was very vague, and they didn't bring up all the categories. No one took notes. And it didn't cover much, and the only time we learned something was when a student was like, oh wait, I know something about this. And then that student then felt embarrassed.
I was often that embarrassed student in my classes, but that didn't stop me from trying to bring attention to the issue. Kenna Hazelwood coordinates LGBTQ student services for the San Francisco Unified School District. It's part of her job to make sure students have a comprehensive and inclusive health education.
When you think of anything that a queer, trans, or intersex student might need within their school life, I am responsible for that.
She says comprehensive sex ed is actually mandated in California. That's because of the 2016 California Healthy Youth Act.
It means it needs to be scientifically accurate. It means that we must talk about multiple gender identities, we must talk about multiple sexual orientations, normalize it, not pathologize it.
Kenna led the district's recent revisions to its middle school curriculum. She consults the latest terminology in scientific studies and gets help from SFUSD students.
We have a health ed team, is to have community feedback. And so that includes community members, that includes students, that includes teachers, that includes caregivers and families, to be able to look through the curriculum, make sure that it is meeting their needs.
I asked her if I could share some feedback.
I love feedback, please, come on.
So I told her about my experience not seeing asexuality reflected in my health education. I have very few negative feelings towards my sexuality, but if it could be brought up in any depth at all, in or out of school, then I might feel like it was at least normal.
Like the idea of your type of intimacy not being valid or seen, how erasing is that? How dehumanizing is that? And similarly for people who are asexual, and to recognize and have that validated. So thank you for naming that. I will 100% make sure that we go back and see where it is that we can integrate that into our space again.
Hearing that gave me hope.
I wish I had a magic wand where I could just like change it all. Like we still haven't met with like baby Kenna's dreams of a queer utopia.
But her dream of a queer, inclusive, and accepting utopia seems practically impossible with the current state of affairs in our country. From the poor handling of the pandemic, to the insurrection, and now Roe v. Wade being overturned, I just haven't seen a lot of wins. The thing that hits the hardest for me has been the national attacks on our rights to education and support from our schools. The recent passage of Florida's Don't Say Gay bill is just one example.
Florida's governor has signed the Parental Rights in Education bill, better known by critics or dubbed by critics as the Don't Say Gay bill.
Florida's law bans kindergarten through third grade teachers from even talking about gender or sexual orientation in class. Similar legislation has been introduced in more than a dozen other states.
Now, a lot of us old folks, we didn't get sex ed. We didn't get it, and if we did, it was probably bad. And because of that, it's almost as though we've forgotten what it was like to be a teen.
Michelle Slabaugh is with the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States.
I am the Director of Social Impact and Strategic Communications for CECUS, Sex Ed for Social Change. You know, we have been the national voice of sex education since 1964, asserting that sexuality is a fundamental part of being human and one that's worthy of dignity and respect.
She sees sex education restrictions, book bans, and anti-trans legislation as tools conservatives use to rally their base.
And these are all an attempt from the right to whittle down what public education looks like, to take us back in time, basically, to try to revert us back to a Christian fundamentalist ideology that states that only cisgendered, heteronormative love after marriage and sex after marriage is the right way to go.
Because there is no federal law that requires sex education, the kind of education people get depends on where they live. Only 3 states require comprehensive sex education in schools.
That's California, Washington, and Oregon.
She's advocating for a bill that would set federal standards. It's called the Real Education and Access for Healthy Youth Act, or RIA for short.
It's not about STIs. It's about comprehensive sex education is about all things that make us human.
Through gender sexuality alliances, queer people like my friends and I are banding together and educating each other. At my school, the GSA is one of the most visible and influential clubs at our school. We even organized a school dance in June called the Fairy Ball. The theme was woodland magic. Fellow San Francisco high school student Ewan Barker Plummer started his own GSA in middle school. Now he advocates for queer students citywide in his role on San Francisco's Youth Commission. He's pushing for a state law to protect families who come to California seeking gender-affirming healthcare or education.
I mean, ignorance is the basis of all of these kind of attacks, right? So we need to counteract that in San Francisco, and we need to fight for those policies on school boards across the state and the country.
Queer students need to have safe spaces where we can speak our minds and fight for change without being persecuted. That's what makes inclusive schools and teachers vital to the queer community.
It's been a terrible year for trans youth.
Twine Goddard is just starting high school and is another advocate for LGBTQIA+ youth. They have cropped hair and play Dungeons & Dragons in their free time. Twine has a cheerful personality, and they say their school makes it easy to speak up. But they said they didn't always feel welcome. They went to school in Pittsburgh in the 5th grade.
My best friend asked me if I was gay because I had a crush on her. I told her no, like, I don't like girls, but then I do like girls. So, you know, I did have a crush on her. And so then in 6th grade, I finally realized, oh, I'm gay.
They said there wasn't really room to be queer.
It was just like my friends were queer, and then there were like some older like 7th and 8th graders who would like explain certain terms to me because they knew more about it because, you know, they'd been in the community longer.
But in Denman Middle School in San Francisco, there was a flourishing diversity club, and by extension, a place for Twine to be themselves. They were able to make queer friends and explore their identity. They even walked out of class last spring with other students to protest the Don't Say Gay law in Florida.
It felt really good to be able to do something about the messed up stuff in the world right now. Even if it maybe isn't like the biggest thing, maybe it's just like a small protest in my school, but it's still something. I'm doing something to try to make things better. And that feels good.
Twine is actually excited to start high school because they expect that same kind of support. And I have to say, I feel hopeful as well. There's a whole fight for the rights of the LGBTQIA+ youth that I wasn't aware of. But now that I am, I hope that the incoming freshmen have a better sex and health education than I did. I hope that Don't Say Gay can be overturned, and the whole of the United States of America can share a comprehensive, inclusive, and equitable health curriculum. I'm excited to rejoin the GSA, to meet more queer students, and to find my community all over again.
Thanks for that piece, George. I've certainly had some not great experiences with sex ed where the teachers didn't say a single thing outside of the norm being cisgender heterosexual sex. I definitely agree with George that there needs to be much more inclusive sex ed. It will improve the lives of every student to know what's out there and be prepared to be safe in whatever situations they end up in.
That episode of TBH first aired in 2022. It's from season 3 of the podcast and recently won an award for Best Student Project from the Northern California chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. The season was hosted by Cassidy Kenner-Gomes, and that story was produced by George Rytan. We also heard the voices of Carolina Quadros, Elizabeth Trong, and Aria Baldinger-Williams. Congratulations. You can find all seasons of TBH online and at at klw.org/tbh. Before we say goodbye, here's some music from a Bay Area band.
Just wanna say you're perfect. Feel I had to let you know. Everything is in its right place. You show the wind which way to blow.
This is 10 Ton Chicken from Berkeley. They'll be playing at Albany's Ivy Room this Friday.
I just had to say you're perfect. All your ducks are in a row. Hear them calling in the evening. Wave your arms, let them go.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Pat McMahon, Molly Blair Salyer, Devin Strolovich, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.